A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
I watched a 3-minute REM check turn into a 2-hour thermal paste and tears saga this week. The prompt hit home. You get one memory error, and suddenly you're pulling the GPU, which means the CPU cooler has to come off, which means new thermal paste and reseating the processor. 3 minutes becomes 2 hours because the tower form factor just stacks everything in the way of everything else.
This is the thing nobody tells you when you build your first desktop. The layout is optimized for assembly, not for maintenance. The GPU sits right on top of the RAM slots. The CPU cooler overhangs everything. It's like they designed it to be built once and never touched again.
Which would be fine if computers never needed to be touched again. But here we are, in a moment where GPU sizes are absolutely ballooning. Multi-GPU setups are making a quiet comeback for local LLM inference, and the traditional tower case is hitting physical limits it was never designed for.
The RTX 40 series cards are comically large. The 4090 is a 3.5 slot card that's over 300 millimeters long. You put two of those in a standard ATX tower, and you're not just out of space, you're out of airflow, out of slot clearance, out of everything. The form factor is fighting you at every turn.
That's really what the prompt is getting at. If you're regularly upgrading or diagnosing issues in a custom-built computer, eventually logic dictates moving to something more serviceable. Something where you can slide a GPU out without performing open-heart surgery on the entire machine.
Which brings us to rack mounting. It's typically thought of as a server thing, enterprise gear, data centers, but the actual mechanics of it apply just as well to a desktop workstation. And I think that's the core question here. Can you rack mount a desktop without turning it into a server? And if so, what does that actually look like for someone who's never touched a rack chassis before?
Let's get into it. The pain is real. The form factor is fighting us. And there's a whole world of 4U chassis and sliding rails that might actually solve the problem. The question is whether the cure is worse than the disease.
Let's define what we're actually talking about here, because the phrase rack mounting a desktop sounds like you're about to install a mainframe in your hallway. That's not it. The core thesis is simpler. Rack mounting a desktop is about three things: serviceability, thermal zoning, and reclaiming desk space. It's not about server-grade redundancy. It's not about ECC memory and dual power supplies and 5-9s uptime. It's about making the machine easier to live with.
Serviceability being the big one, given the thermal paste saga we just described.
In a rack chassis with sliding rails, you pull the whole machine out like a drawer, pop the lid, and everything's accessible. GPU swap is 10 minutes. RAM reseat is 3 minutes, the way it should be. You're not on your hands and knees under a desk with a flashlight in your teeth.
Thermal zoning is the part people don't think about until their dual GPU setup starts thermal throttling. A tower case is basically one big room. Everything breathes the same air. A rack chassis channels air front to back in defined zones.
And the third piece, desk space, is underrated. A 4U chassis is about 7 inches tall. It sits in a rack under or beside your desk, and your actual desk surface is clear. No giant RGB tower taking up 2 square feet of prime real estate.
The pitch is, your computer becomes a drawer you can open, with better cooling, and your desk is yours again. That's the upside. But there's a mental hurdle here, and I think it's worth naming up front. People hear rack mount and immediately picture a 42-unit server cabinet in a data center with hot aisles and cold aisles and jet engine fans.
That's the enterprise form factor myth. And it's a myth because most rack chassis are just steel boxes with standardized mounting holes. The guts inside are still consumer ATX or micro ATX gear. You don't need a server-grade motherboard. You don't need Xeon processors. You can take the exact same components from your tower build, same motherboard, same CPU, same RAM, same GPU, and mount them in a 4U chassis. The chassis doesn't care what's inside it.
It's just a box with different screw holes.
It's just a box with different screw holes. A well-engineered box, but yes. The 19-inch rack standard was invented for telephone equipment in the 1920s. It's not some exotic server technology, it's just a mounting system.
Which makes the real question less, is this technically possible? And more, when does the pain of a tower outweigh the friction of switching? And that's a decision tree, not a universal answer.
The decision tree has branches. If you build a PC once and never open it again for 4 years, stick with a tower. The friction of learning rack specs and buying new chassis isn't worth it. If you're swapping GPUs annually, adding storage, troubleshooting, tinkering, that's where the math flips.
The prompt mentions a spare GPU, sitting unused because there's physically no space for it in the case. That's a branch point right there. If your hardware ambitions have outgrown your form factor, the tower isn't serving you anymore.
There's one more group this makes sense for, anyone running local LLM inference. Multi-GPU setups are making a real comeback in that space, and towers simply aren't designed for two or three double-wide cards breathing properly. A 4U chassis with high static pressure fans in a front-to-back layout changes the whole thermal equation.
To be clear about who this is not for, if you have a single GPU, a mid-tower case, and you open it twice a year to dust it, you're probably fine where you are.
That's okay. Not everyone needs to rack mount. But for the people who do, the tinkerers, the multi-GPU crowd, the folks who've had their own thermal paste and tears afternoon, the rest of this episode is for you. Let's open up a 4U chassis and see what actually fits, because the mechanical compatibility details are where people get burned. The prompt described that cascade perfectly, GPU out, cooler off, CPU reseated, thermal paste reapplied, all for a RAM stick that might have been slightly loose. In a tower, the GPU sits horizontally, blocking the RAM slots. The CPU cooler, if it's a big air cooler like a Noctua NHD15, overhangs the top PCIe slot. You literally cannot reach the RAM without removing the graphics card first.
Removing the graphics card means reaching a tiny PCIe retention clip that's buried under the cooler overhang. If you've got large hands, you're already in trouble.
So you pull the GPU, but the cooler's fins are still blocking the RAM clips. Now the cooler comes off, which breaks the thermal paste seal. And, since the CPU might have shifted slightly when you unlatch the cooler, best practice is to clean it, repaste, and reseat. 3 minutes becomes 2 hours. The tower isn't malicious. It's just that the layout stacks every component in a vertical dependency chain. RAM is behind GPU, GPU is under cooler, cooler is on CPU. Nothing is independently accessible.
The rack chassis flips that dependency chain entirely. Slide the machine out on rails, pop the top panel, and the RAM slots are right there. The GPU is mounted vertically on a riser or sits in slots with clear overhead access. You're not digging through layers.
That vertical GPU mounting is key for dual GPU setups, which is the second half of the prompt's frustration. In a standard ATX tower, the PCIe slots are spaced about 20 millimeters apart. A modern high-end GPU is a 2.5 to 3.5 slot card that's 50 to 70 millimeters thick. Put one in the top slot, and the second slot is physically buried. You can't even plug the second card in without a riser cable.
You're forced into riser territory, and that's where things get expensive fast.
PCIe riser cables have a quality cliff. A passive PCIe 4.80x16 riser, the kind that costs $20 on Amazon, starts losing signal integrity at around 200 millimeters. Beyond 300 millimeters, you're in active retimer territory, which adds $50 to $100 to the cable cost and introduces its own failure modes. I've seen a cheap PCIe 4.0 riser cause random GPU crashes that only went away when the BIOS was locked to Gen 3 speeds. The card was fine, the motherboard was fine, but the riser couldn't handle Gen 4 signaling at full bandwidth.
The tower forces you into a fragile, expensive workaround just to use the PCIe slots your motherboard already has.
Even if you solve the riser problem, you've still got airflow starvation. Two GPUs stacked with a few millimeters between them in a tower. The top card is breathing the bottom card's exhaust. Temps climb, clocks drop, and you're back to throttling. A rack chassis separates the cards physically and channels air front to back across both of them in parallel, not in series.
That front-to-back channeling is the thermal architecture difference you mentioned earlier. In a tower, you've got intake fans at the front and exhaust at the rear, but the GPU fans are pulling from inside the case. They're recirculating warm air. In a rack chassis, the drive bays at the front have fans pulling fresh air straight through the entire chassis. The GPU intake is fed by those front fans, not by whatever's swirling around inside.
Which brings us to chassis anatomy, because not all rack chassis are the same, and the specs can be overwhelming if you've never shopped for one. The U in 4U means rack units. 1U is 1.75 inches. A 4U chassis gives you about 7 inches of vertical space, which translates to about 155 millimeters of CPU cooler clearance. That's the hard limit. A Noctua NH-D15 is 165 millimeters tall. It won't fit in most 4U chassis.
The Kulu that caused all that grief in the tower might not even fit in the rack chassis you buy to solve the problem.
And that's the kind of gotcha that sends people back to towers. You have to check CPU cooler height against the chassis spec before you buy. The Rosewill RSV L4500, which is probably the most popular budget 4U chassis, has about 154 millimeters of clearance above the socket. That rules out most tower-style air coolers. You're looking at top-down coolers like the Noctua NHL2S or a low-profile AIO liquid cooler.
That's just the height. What about depth?
Depth is where people really get tripped up. Rack chassis come in two flavors, short depth and full depth. Short depth is around 450 millimeters, that's home lab friendly, fits in a network cabinet, fits on a desk. Full depth is 700 millimeters or more, that's data center territory, requires a full depth server rack. The Rosewill RSV L4500 is about 550 millimeters deep, which sits in between. It'll fit in a standard server rack, but it's a stretch for shallow network cabinets.
You need to measure your rack before you buy the chassis, and measure your components before you buy either.
Here's the specific gotcha with short-depth chassis, PSU depth versus GPU length. A standard ATX power supply is about 160 millimeters long. A high wattage unit can push 180 or 200 millimeters. In a short-depth 4U chassis, the PSU sits in the front and the GPU sits behind it. If your PSU is 200 millimeters deep and your GPU is 300 millimeters long, you've eaten 500 millimeters before you've even accounted for cable bend radius.
Cable bend radius being the extra 50 millimeters you need, so your power cables aren't kinked at a right angle against the chassis wall.
The Rosewill RSV L4500 has a maximum GPU length of 330 millimeters with the drive cage installed, or 400 millimeters if you remove it. Two RTX 3090s at 313 millimeters each will fit, but only just, and only with the drive cage out. That's the kind of clearance math you do before you spend money.
Another gotcha you mentioned is the inverted motherboard. What's that about?
Many rack chassis flip the motherboard orientation 180 degrees. In a tower, the I/O shield is at the rear top. In an inverted rack chassis, the I/O shield is at the rear bottom, and the PCIe slots are above it. This changes two things. First, your CPU cooler is now at the bottom of the chassis, which can interfere with the chassis floor if the cooler is too tall. Second, the airflow pattern shifts, heat rises, and now your CPU is at the bottom of the stack, heating everything above it.
You're fighting physics.
You're working with physics, but you have to know what's happening. The fix is to check the chassis manual for motherboard orientation before buying. If it's inverted, plan your cooling accordingly. Maybe a top-down cooler with the fan blowing upward, or an AIO with the radiator mounted at the front intake. The Rosewill RSV L4500 uses standard orientation, not inverted, which is one reason it's the go-to recommendation for first-timers.
To recap the compatibility checklist so far, chassis depth, CPU cooler height, PSU form factor and depth, GPU length, and motherboard orientation. Five specs that can each individually ruin your build if you get them wrong.
We haven't even talked about noise yet.
That's next, I assume.
That's next. This is the elephant in the room, and it's the thing that makes people abandon rack builds after a month. The physics is straightforward, but the implications aren't obvious until you're living with it. A tower case like the Fractal Define 7XL uses 140 millimeter fans spinning at about 800 RPM. That's around 35 decibels at idle, quiet enough that you forget the machine is on. A 4U rack chassis typically uses 120mm fans, and to move the same air through a denser front-to-back channel, those fans often run at 1500 to 2000 RPM. That's 42 to 48 decibels. The difference between 35 and 42 decibels doesn't sound like much on paper, but decibels are logarithmic. 42 is roughly twice as loud perceptually.
The rack build is literally twice as noisy out of the box.
Out of the box, yes. And that's what the stock fans most budget 4U chassis ship with, three 120mm fans that sound like a small server room. The fix isn't complicated, but it adds cost. You swap the stock fans for Noctua Industrial PPC or Redux fans with PWM control, and you run them through a fan controller or the motherboard's fan curve set to prioritize silence until temperatures climb. That can bring a rack build down to around 38 decibels at idle, not tower quiet, but livable.
Livable being the operative word if this thing is sitting in your home office and not in a basement.
Which brings us to the rack in a home office reality. There are two paths, open frame rack or enclosed cabinet. An open frame 12U rack on casters weighs about 30 pounds empty, fits under a desk, and costs around $100 to $150. An enclosed server cabinet, the kind with a locking front door and sound dampening panels, starts at about $400 and goes up fast. The enclosed cabinet solves the noise problem by trapping it, but it introduces a thermal problem because now you're cooling a box inside a box.
The open frame rack introduces what I'll call the social contract problem.
The social contract with housemates. An open frame rack transmits vibration directly into the floor. Hard drives, fans, anything with a motor, that hum travels through the casters into floorboards and joists. If your office is above a living space, someone downstairs is going to hear a low-frequency drone. The fix is vibration isolation pads under the casters, which is another $20 and a trip to the hardware store.
Before you've even bought the chassis, you're already budgeting for replacement fans, a fan controller, vibration pads, and possibly an enclosed cabinet. The entry cost is climbing.
We haven't gotten to cable management yet, which is the hidden time sink. In a tower, cable management is mostly cosmetic. In a rack, it's structural. You've got power cables, data cables, and network cables all running in the same direction, and if you just zip tie them into a bundle, the first time you need to slide a chassis out on its rails, everything snags. The cables have to move with the chassis, which means you need a cable management arm, a hinged bracket that keeps cables organized as the chassis slides in and out. A power distribution unit, yes. A rack mount power strip that sits at the back of the rack, that's another $40 to $80. And you need to think about cable lengths differently. Your power cables need enough slack for the full slide-out travel, but not so much slack that they droop into the airflow path behind the chassis. It's a Goldilocks problem, and the solution is measuring everything twice and buying cables in specific lengths, rather than using whatever came in the box.
Which is the opposite of how most people build desktops. The tower approach is, buy the parts, throw them in, manage the cables enough to close the side panel. The rack approach is, measure, spec, plan cable routing, and then build.
That upfront planning is what pays off later. This is the upgrade cycle advantage, and it's the strongest argument for rack mounting if you tinker regularly. Once the machine is racked and cabled properly, a GPU swap is a 10-minute job. Slide the chassis out on rails, pop two thumb screws, remove the top panel, and the GPU is right there. No cooler removal, no thermal paste, no digging through layers. Swap the card, close the panel, slide it back.
Versus 2 hours for the tower teardown we described.
Quantify that over 3 years. Say you swap GPUs once a year, add storage twice, and reseat RAM once. That's 4 service events annually. In a tower, that's maybe 8 hours of teardown and reassembly per year. In a rack chassis, that's maybe an hour total. Over 3 years, the rack saves you 21 hours of frustration. Even if the rack setup costs $300 more up front, you're effectively paying yourself about $14 an hour to not be on your hands and knees under a desk.
That's before we factor in the psychological cost of dreading every hardware change because you know it means a 2-hour wrestling match.
The real question, is this actually cheaper than just buying a bigger tower case, has a nuanced answer. A Fractal Define 7XL costs about $200. A Rosewill RSV L4500 costs about $150. add an open frame 12U rack for $150, replacement Noctua fans for $60, a PDU for $50, and a cable management arm for $30. That's $440 total versus $200 for the big tower. The rack setup is more than double the cost up front.
The big tower doesn't solve the serviceability problem. It's still a tower. You're still pulling GPUs out from under coolers. You've just got more room to do it in.
The big tower solves the space problem, but not the access problem. The rack solves both, at a higher entry cost, with a noise penalty you have to engineer around. Whether that math works depends entirely on how often you're inside the machine.
To the prompt score question, can you rack mount a desktop without turning it into a server? The answer is yes, but the real question is whether you're willing to pay the noise tax and the planning tax to get the serviceability payoff.
The planning tax is real. You're not just buying a different box. You're learning a new set of specs, a new set of constraints, and a new set of vendors. But once you've done it once, it's done. The second build is fast. The third is automatic. Let's boil this down to something actionable, because someone listening right now is staring at their tower with a side panel off and a tube of thermal paste in hand, wondering if there's a better way.
There is, but it requires a checklist. And the first thing on that checklist is the one most people skip: measure everything, then add 50 millimeters.
Measure motherboard depth, GPU length, and PSU depth. Add 50 millimeters for cable bend radius, the space your power cables need to curve without kinking against the chassis wall. Skip this step and you'll discover the problem when the chassis arrives and your side panel won't close because the PCIe power cables are jammed against the GPU.
The 50 millimeters is the difference between it fits on paper and it fits in reality.
Once you've got your measurements, there are three specs that matter more than anything else. First, chassis depth. Minimum 450 millimeters for most GPUs, and that's with careful cable routing. If you're running a card over 300 millimeters, you want 550 or more.
Second, CPU cooler height. In a 4U chassis, you've got about 155 millimeters to work with. That rules out almost every tower-style air cooler. You're looking at top-down coolers or low-profile liquid cooling.
Third, PSU form factor. Standard ATX fits most 4U chassis, but check the depth. A 200mm PSU and a 450mm chassis leaves you 250mm for everything else: GPU, cables, airflow. That math gets tight fast. SFX power supplies buy you back 30 to 40mm of depth, which can be the difference between fitting and not.
The three numbers to check before you buy anything: chassis depth, cooler max height, PSU form factor, and depth. Get any of them wrong and you're returning hardware.
My recommendation for a first-timer: start with a 4U short depth chassis on an open frame rack. The Rosewill RSV L45U Ode is the budget gold standard. Standard motherboard orientation, fits ATX boards, removable drive cage, and it's cheap enough that you're not crying if you decide rack life isn't for you.
Avoid enclosed cabinets until you know your thermals are under control. An enclosed cabinet is just a heat trap if you haven't dialed in your fan curves.
Here's the tip that saved me a lot of grief. Buy a used 4U chassis locally first. Facebook Marketplace, Craigslist, whatever. Test fit your components. Make sure your cooler clears, your GPU fits, your PSU doesn't collide with anything. Then, once you're confident, invest in rails and a proper rack.
The used chassis is your sandbox. $40 gets you the answer to, will this actually work without the $400 commitment?
If it does work, if the components fit and the noise is manageable and the serviceability is as good as promised, then you buy the rails, the PDU, the cable management arm, the whole system. But you don't commit to the ecosystem until you've proven the form factor.
We've laid out the checklist, the gotchas, the budget math. But there's a question I keep coming back to. What happens when liquid cooling becomes the default? Not AIOs stuffed inside a chassis, but external radiators. The kind where the GPU ships with its own radiator pod that sits somewhere else entirely.
That's the wild card. If GPUs start arriving with external liquid cooling as standard, and we're seeing movement there, the liquid-cooled 4090 variants with pre-filled quick disconnect fittings, then the thermal argument for rack mounting partially evaporates. You don't need front-to-back airflow channeling if the GPU is dumping its heat into a radiator mounted outside the chassis.
The serviceability argument gets stronger, not weaker. External radiators mean more hoses, more fittings, more points of failure. A rack chassis with sliding rails makes tracing a leak or swapping a fitting infinitely easier than reaching into the dark crevice behind a tower.
The GPU itself still has to live somewhere. External radiator or not, two double-wide cards in a tower are still fighting for physical space. The rack solves the mounting problem even if it stops solving the cooling problem. So I don't think liquid cooling obsoletes rack mounting. It just shifts which part of the value proposition matters most.
The other future threat is PCIe 5.0 risers. Right now, they're expensive and unproven at distance. But if the cost drops and signal integrity at 400 millimeters becomes reliable, the whole riser ecosystem changes.
That's the inflection point to watch. Right now, going rack means accepting that you might need to lock your BIOS to Gen 4 or even Gen 3 speeds if your riser cable is marginal. That's a real performance trade-off. When Gen 5 risers become commodity parts, and that's probably 18 to 24 months out, the cost of rack conversion drops and the performance penalty disappears. At that point, the only remaining barrier is the noise engineering and the upfront planning.
Which brings us to the final thought, and I think it's the one that matters most. The best form factor is the one you don't have to think about. You shouldn't be aware of your computer's physical existence while you're using it. If you're dreading hardware maintenance, if you're leaving a GPU on the shelf because installing it means a two-hour ordeal, the form factor is failing you.
Rack mounting is a means to that end, the end of not thinking about the box. It's not a hobby in itself, or at least it shouldn't be. It's infrastructure, and good infrastructure is invisible.
Until someone else sees it and asks why you have a server rack in your office.
Then you get to say, it's not a server, it's my desktop, and watch them try to process that.
Covering the covers.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1720s, cartographers believed in the existence of the mountains of Osh, a towering range supposedly bisecting what is now Kyrgyzstan, drawn on maps for decades based entirely on second-hand traveler accounts. No such mountains ever existed. The error persisted until Russian surveyors reached the region in the 1850s and found flat steppe where peaks were supposed to be.
A mountain range that nobody bothered to verify for over a century.
Cartography by Vibes.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Our producer is Hilbert Flumingtop, and if you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you listen. It genuinely helps more people find the show. Find every episode at myweirdprompts.com. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.